Chapter 24. The Quality of Angels. Sanguinius swept over the battle within the belly of a stormbird. The port side access hatch was open, letting cold, thundering wind blast into the transit bay. The Primarch stood hunched within the doorway, his hair whipping about in the airflow as he cast his keen gaze over the battle raging upon the plains. Hundreds of Titans engaged at close to point-blank range. The massed formation of the first days of the battle had broken up into a knotted collection of skirmishes. Lone Titans duelled around heaps of burning war machines. Packs of warhounds loped through storms of laser fire, relying on their speed to see them safe. Phalanxes of warlords stood opposite one another, exchanging fire like soldiers of early black powder cultures, doggedly holding their ground in the hope the foe would break first. Titans were never intended to fight like primitive braves. He imagined them grappling on the ground, weapons discarded, attempting to brain each other with rocks and fist. Dozens of engines had fallen. As he watched, a circle of light burst upwards as a reactor went critical. It was bright enough to temporarily blind a mortal man, but Sanguinius stared unflinchingly at it as it grew and shrank back, winking out to leave a black, perfectly round scar upon the earth. More machines were dying with every hour. Ahead was the reality-defying bulk of Neocon City. The void shields had collapsed around large parts of it, and the mountainous hive was under vicious bombardment from the fleet. Huge rents had opened in the side. Fires burned unchecked over hundreds of levels. Its defense lasers were mercilessly targeted by the Imperial fleet, but its galleries housed thousands of artillery pieces that showered the plain with explosive scatterings of metal, and the bastions of its walls were replete with the armaments of fallen god engines. He watched it all with a Primarch's wisdom, asking his pilots to bank one way or another so he could better examine details. He did not approve of what he saw, but war was not a matter of best circumstances. If one could choose the moment, disposition of forces and field of conflict, then there would be no war at all, he reminded himself. From a voxmeter mounted in his collar, a steady stream of reports came in from his fleet and armies. The attack on the anvil had begun. Ascalon had already penetrated the outer defences of the docks. Amit fought upon its voidal ramparts. The fleet swore off probing attacks from traitor flotillas. Measured by the standards of the day, the battle was going well. But the standards of the day were dire. The size of Horus's armies in the Beta Garmin cluster had shocked him. If this had been a compliance, they would have retreated and re-evaluated their plans. They simply did not have that option. His sons thought the situation parlous too. Raldoron stood at Sanguinius's side. There was just enough room for the equerry to see out past the gold-armoured Primarch down to the battle, and he had formed his own opinion. "This is not an optimal strategic choice," said Raldoron, seeing something of what his genefather saw. "There are war machines dying down there that should be on Terra. We gain nothing by committing so many Titans to this battle. We shall lose more than we need to for a city of questionable strategic value." Sanguinius nodded. He had been pensive for so long now, his sons had ceased to question his behaviour. There was no talk of his mood changing back, or even of comparing the old Sanguinius to the new. Quiet, brooding, and distracted was how they had come to recognise their lord, a tendency that had begun at Cygnus and grown ever since. And although he had become more centred after the events of Davin, and more resolved, he had hardly grown more joyful.
"You are correct, First Captain."
Where Raldoron needed his helm's voxmeter to be heard over the wind, Sanguinius did not. He was helmless and spoke quietly, but his voice was heard by Raldoron and all the other blood angels within the ship, a touch of soul to soul that sound played no part in.
"This is the only way. The Titan Legios bicker. We hardly have control over the situation in Beta Garmin. We lead a fragile coalition. Horus has fear and fanaticism to weld his armies together. In divisive forces, further division is the worst solution. Here, together, the Legios have purpose and share risk equally. This strategy serves more than tactical needs, but addresses the exigencies of morale and politics. Ralderon made a dismissive noise that his golden helm amplified. Sanguinius glanced at him before returning his attention to the battlefield.
I know well your dislike for politics, but although you were made for war, you are wise enough to know that war itself is only an extension of the political, and a civil war is the most political of all kinds.
Was it politics, my lord, that brought about this ruination? I thought it was treachery.
It was, said Sanguinius, choosing to ignore Ralderon's challenging tone. Though the politics of gods, it was politics still. Lord Dorne was right to send the bulk of the Titan Legios here. Can you imagine this carnage upon the surface of Terra? It is better that they fight and die here than extinguish each other before the palace. There would be precious little left if the whole of the Collegia Titanica were to settle its differences within sight of my father.
These engines were always overmighty. Did you not ever question the concentration of such power in the hands of the Mechanicum?
Politics, said Sanguinius sadly.
You are a space marine. You are the killers of men. They are the shatterers of worlds. Each thing has its place. He paused. But you think them ill-disciplined, and that they might be more effectively employed.
Yes, my lord, admitted Ralderon.
That is so. But do not blame them. These Legios are fractious only because they wish to survive. They too have their brotherhoods and their bonds. They look upon the prospect of a battle of this kind, and they see their order's annihilation. They, like we, do not care for their own lives. They are faithful, worthy, and mightier than most men of any sort, but they are still men and women, and need to be treated as such. They accept gladly their own loss, or even the loss of all of their kind. But no one can easily sacrifice themselves while others are left unscathed. Not one of them would have agreed to commit themselves fully if their peers were given other duties. This is a fight of so great a magnitude, an extinction of machines. It undermines their discipline and their sense of duty.
You say they are strong. The god engines are, but their weakness is human.
There is weakness in all the works of men. Yourself and myself included, said Sanguinius, rousing a little. Neither you nor I would gladly sacrifice our own legion for another without firm cause, and if asked to lay down our lives to the last space marine while our brothers in other legions were kept to one side, we too would deem it unfair and cruel.
He looked out over the wrecked plains. That kind of thoughtlessness helped us into this hell.
Would Perturabo have turned if his legion had been shown a little more consideration? Would Mortarion, if his ego had been paid a touch more care? Kurz, too, would have been capable of less harm had his madness been addressed. And it should have been. But it was not. We were made to be the lords of men. Our father trusted us too much to solve our own problems, and we fell so far short of his vision.
Ralderon was shocked by his father's insights, and would have deemed them close to treasonous if they had not been uttered in so measured a way or by so perfect a being. Sanguinius saw this, as he saw Ralderon's unswerving loyalty and his love. It pained the Primarch to know that Ralderon and many of the others would have followed him into damnation if he had chosen the other path presented him. That his legion marched so faithfully towards a different sort of hell sickened Sanguinius. But there was no other way.
We followed the Emperor's lead, my lord, said Ralderon. Look not to the Emperor and expect perfection. My father is mighty and good and wise, but he is a man. Nobody is infallible. Such false faith gave us certainty when there was none.
Then perhaps he should have discouraged our faith, said Ralderon.
He tried, said Sanguinius. He looked to the sky. The sun was a smear in the yellow, against which attack craft warred like moths, battering against a curtained casement deep in the night. He smiled with bitter inner knowledge. Hubris is a trap for us all. That is the last certainty when all others are gone. There are no more certainties in this galaxy, my son. Only hubris and only war.
This is a better war than most.
It is the one we need to fight. These armies that flock to the system, they might follow Gilliman, but he is not here.
And would they obey the Lion, Russ, or the Khan, or even Dawn?
I have to be here. This is my place for now. I will not say it is my destiny, for I defy the concept, but it is my rightful role, and I choose it without qualm.
He stirred, remembering similar words spoken by his brother, Leman Russ, not so long ago. Where was the great wolf now, he wondered. Perhaps he was dead. No word had come from him or his legion since he had left to face Horus. Were they all doomed to that same mistake? Both he and Russ believed fighting the War Master to be their fate. His wings flexed. The movement was a wordless signal to his sanguinary guard, who took the ornaments looped over his wings' wrists and handed the Primarch his golden helm in preparation for flight.
Well, the majority of my brother's Titans are here. We can press him elsewhere. The Khan's Ordu wounds his armies, bleeding him with 1,000 Tulwar cuts. Horus is not here, but we can hurt him. We shall retake Neocon City and this world, and so stabilize the front. The more time Horus expends in fighting us in the cluster, the more likely our ultimate victory becomes.
He held out his right hand. The blade Encarmine was presented to him, and he clasped its hilt. Into his left he took the glorious Spear of Telesto.
The battle for the Anvil goes to plan. Ascalon and Amit will deliver the Star Fortress unto me. We shall take this city.
He turned from the side door and marched through the transit hold. Sanguinary guards stood as he passed, their artificial wings unfolding in readiness to follow the Primarch.
Open the rear ramp,
Ralderon ordered. The side door closed. The ship tilted as the pilots adjusted to the change in airflow. Then again, as the rear ramp, large enough for a tank to drive down, was pushed wide by gleaming pistons. Sanguinius walked to the very edge and stared down at the maelstrom, his wings slightly spread to help him maintain his balance. There was never a time when the Primarch did not have poise. He was perfection itself, incarnated in human form.
Time to show our hand.
He searched the ground from the open ramp, post-human vision scouring the battlefield for a place to make his appearance. Sanguinius understood almost as well as Fulgrim that there was an element of theatre to war.
War is art. One must make a statement with it, or it cannot be called art at all.
A conflict caught his eye, a fight within the wider fight of surpassing majesty.
There.
He pointed his sword to where a pair of Imperators faced off against one another, dozens of Titans of varying sorts in support, like kings attended by their knights, or the pieces upon a regicide board. Their liveries were caked in brown dust, dulling the colours, and yet, though all involved were made to the same plan, by the same science, there was no mistaking which side each Titan belonged to. The way they moved was different. Traitors strutted. Those loyal to Terra moved with the machine's solidity. Less fluid, perhaps,
but purer in motion.
That Titan bears the mark class Imperator, in honor of my father. It is a disgrace to his name. Its personal designation is Axis Mundi, as if Horus's plans for humanity will be the axis around which the universe shall spin. It will not be so. Both names are insults. It will fall by my hand.
Through the distortions of his helm's voxmeter, his voice was still beautiful.
My lord, it is not wise, said Raldoron. The machine will shoot you down from the sky. It is too great a threat.
That is why it must die. A mark, a sign, a show of imperial strength. My traitor brothers put so much store in omens.
I will give them a sign they can easily read.
At Sanguinius's order, half a dozen other stormbirds flew into formation with his own. Shrapnel burst all around them as the city sought to down the Primarch, but not one was touched. Still in formation, they banked around and swooped down at their target. The towers upon the Imperator's back opened fire, streaking the air with las and shell, but the void shields of the gunships held, and they stooped like hawks upon their prey, their engines shrieking.
"Put down with the others where you might do some good," said Sanguinius to Raldoron. "The ramparts, perhaps. I leave the decision to you, First Captain."
"You cannot, my lord," said Raldoron.
The engines screamed louder and louder. Explosions boomed around the ship. The void shields reacted with curlicued patterns of energy and a smell of sweetness too close to rot. Sanguinius spread his wings and held aloft his sword and his spear.
I can do as I will, Raldoron, without fear or caution. You forget my father's greatest gift to me, through the foresight he gave me. I know I do not die here today.
With those words, he fell backwards out of the Stormbird, turned and stretched out his wings. From the ships about, dozens of gold-clad warriors leapt after their Primarch into the cauldron of war. The heavens split over the bowed backs of 1,000 titans. A sacred luminance outshone the sun. The clouds cracked, and the sky wept tears of light. A lord of angels flew down from his high palace to bring justice to the betrayers. Arms spread, wings spread, and gold-limbed, he swooped across the field of iron. Guns roared and barked. Machine giants wailed their terrible belligerent songs. All was thunder and death, but none could touch him. A mighty halo grew around his head, and a curious magic worked its spell upon the field. A trick of Beta Garmon's meagre light, or a conjuration of fatigued machine-linked minds. However it occurred, all saw it, and those who did could never forget. Sanguinius grew. He filled the air, swelling with otherworldly power, until his limbs encompassed all the heavens and the earth beneath, showing up the meanness of mortal life with his perfection. For the moments the vision lasted, he seemed in truth an angel of olden legend, not sprung from Geneforge at science's command, but wrought upon the anvils of heaven by grim, loving gods to be the correction of wayward humanity. To the princeps of the loyal legios, he was a being of purest light, clean and invigorating, the herald of hope and peace. His sword was the bringer of regretful cuts, the precise amount delivered to bring about the end of bloodshed, then to be sheathed forever and drawn no more. In his radiance, they all glimpsed anew the reason why they were fighting, forgotten by many weary and blunted hearts, and saw again the vision that had sent mankind away from its blasted homeworld and into the stars. Not for conquest, nor for material gain, and the oppression of others for the sake of power, but to realize the grand designs of the Emperor, and bring harmony, not only to mankind, but to all other creatures who valued peace. Within the manifolds of their machines, not a few of them wept to be reminded of what could have been and what had been lost. For those he came for, the vision was dark.
His panoply, spear and sword, were bloody with the promise of vengeance to come. His eyes burned with furious judgment. The feathers of his wings screamed through the air, each one sounding a different accusation. To those who had fallen far from noble beginnings, he was a reminder of what they had abandoned. To those whose wickedness had threatened to overthrow them from the very beginning, he seemed to speak directly, condemning them for their turpitude, and showing to them the depth of their crimes. The battle faltered. Lasbeams still struck, shells still flew, void shields thrummed and crackled. Nothing could stop the war of men-machines. There were too many devices on board the Titans dedicated to the continuation of violence, half-minds and mental extensions that performed tasks with near autonomy. But if weapons did not fall silent and slip from slackened grips, as would have been the case when war was closer and more personal, the men and women whose souls the god-machines borrowed were still affected. Awe and fear entered the hearts of them all. The light changed. Like a bright sun moving behind a cloud and casting the world back into daytime shadow, Sanguinius returned to what he was, a being created by the pinnacle of humanity's genomic arts. Godlike, but not a god. A storm of missiles rushing at the traitor warlords from the wings of the Stormbirds took the vision's place, with Sanguinius and his escort of false angels at their centre. Sanguinius folded back his wings, sending himself into a steep, rapid dive. The Imperator Axis Mundi grew before him. It wore a face that boldly proclaimed the sensibilities of its new masters, a skull, weeping tears of blood, carved from faceted gemstones the size of a space marine. Lasbeams flicked blind needle jabs. Graceful arcs of tracer bullets curved towards him. A single hit to his wing, and he would fall into the broil of fire and death. There were none, though projectiles filled the space around him. "I do not die here today," he thought. Within his helm he gritted his teeth. Welters of data spread themselves over his helm plate. Most urgent to his suit cogitator was the strength of Axis Mundi's void shields, and it presented the facts of this front and centre, ornamented with red runes that promised imminent disaster, with pertinent numerical details in large amber digits to prove the warning's veracity. According to the systems of his golden plate, the void shields were still engaged and at high levels of potency. Sanguinius was coming in too fast. He would trip their displacement reaction. If he were fortunate, he would be atomized as his being was displaced into the warp. If he were not, he would arrive there alive. "I do not die here today," he whispered. The combat chatter of his legion rattled in his ears. His sons were terse to the point, never boasting, never jibing. They were efficient killers. The anvil was taking too long to capture. If it were not wrested from the traitor's hands, the battle on the ground would be for nothing. "I do not die here today," he said again, louder. He knew where he would die. He was going to die at the hands of his brother, upon the vengeful spirit. Horus's grinning, exultant face dogged his every waking moment. The pain of his death seeped backwards down the timeline, polluting the present, hurting him now, becoming more tangible as he approached that final breath. And beyond that fateful moment, in the future, the pain grew, as his death unleashed in full the terrible twin curses locked up in his son's gene seed. His gene seed. But not today. Not now. "I do not die here today," he said. He held his sword out, point forwards. Axis Mundi was too mighty a being to concern itself with something as inconsequential as a Primarch, and ignored him. Its defenders shot at him from the towers of the fortress Acropolis that clung to its back. The Titan concerned itself with its god-sized equals, unleashing apocalyptic weaponry at the foe machines. It carried the same armament on each upper limb, vast cannons capable of slaying warlords with a single shot. They spat electric blue rivers of plasma into the Imperial ranks that crackled and buzzed and beat at Sanguinius with stellar heat. When they shut off, they left broad, glowing tunnels of ionization through the air. Every discharge was accompanied by a deafening whooping and a shock front of incandescent gas. Each eruption consumed thousands of litres of coolant. The waste gases whooshed out of the weapon vents, ranged towards the rear, bleeding out the weapon's heat with it. Then the process began again, the individual cells in the charging coils lighting in sequence, preparing to unleash death. It fired again. The heat was near enough to singe the Primarch's feathers, and when the stream shut off, he was buffeted by the overpressure of a reactor detonation. Axis Mundi deigned to see him. The head moved. The eyes on an Imperator were large enough to serve as true oculi. Tiny figures moved on the command deck behind them. The Titan might hold him in contempt, but its crew deemed him a threat. The fire coming from the fortress intensified. "I do not die here today!" Sanguinius shouted at Axis Mundi in open challenge. The Titan was ahead of him. He would be on it in seconds. Its immensity was all too apparent so close. From its bastion feet to the top of the tallest tower, it was nearly twice the height of a warlord titan, and much heavier. A small army was garrisoned within. Tech thralls and Skitari lined the ramparts, adding their fire to that of emplaced guns. Bullets streaked past that tingled Sanguinius's inhuman senses with the buzz of radioactivity. The alarms of his helm were blaring at him. The void shields were visible as a thin skin of purple hue. Not quite there in a real sense. They looked out of place upon reality, like pressed flowers slipped into a book of technical blueprints. They presented great danger.
"I do not die here today!" he roared.
Missiles loosed by his gunships slammed into the void shields, together with a concentrated barrage from his ships in orbit. Lances boomed through heat-shocked air. Fire rolled around the machine. The voids gave out with squealing pops. But when the fire cleared, and the last of the lances snapped off, Axis Mundi was unscathed. More warnings sang at him. The Titan's reactor would have the void shields online again in seconds. Other god engines were taking the chance to attack the unshielded Imperator. Its armor was thick. Paint blistered, metal ran, but no damage was done, and power signatures building in the reactor heart informed Sanguinius that his opportunity was limited.
"I do not die here today!"
He flew in fast, his warriors boosting their winged jump packs to keep pace with him. He alighted on the Acropolis battlements amid a blizzard of laslite and bullets. Then the killing began.
The cyborg warriors of the Mechanicum felt no fear. Not as the Space Marines were fearless, whose alterations and conditioning enabled them to discount the emotion or funnel it into more productive uses, but who still experienced it. No, the cyborgs could not feel it at all. The parts of the brain responsible for this most preservative of emotions were excised or bypassed. Even if they experienced fear, most of them could be brought under the complete control of their masters at the flick of a switch, and be sent to their deaths, whatever their sentiments on the matter. Between them, the blade in Carmine and the spear of Telesto obliterated every warrior who came against the Primarch. Gobbets of flesh spattered his battle plate. Blood sprayed up the rampart walls. Oil ran freely from the rampart guttering. Metal rang off ceramite armour. A hulking myrmidon, clad in black, ran from a tower doorway as Sanguinius dispatched a brace of tech thralls. He spun about and leveled the spear, its arcane energy projectors vaporizing the cyborg into mist. His sons were landing amid the wrathful bombardment of the loyal titans, guns blazing, jets roaring, alighting on the wallwalk and the towers between eruptions of fire. They landed, scrabbling on the dome of the head. They arced gracefully down onto the walkway between Acropolis and Zella, as god weapons carved out scars on the Titan's thick hide. Death was around them, but they did not care. They were death. Their bolters banged death's drumbeat, each lick ending in a catastrophic crash that sundered the organic from the artificial and rendered the question of the weakness of the flesh moot. Sanguinius's teeth itched. An annoying whine clawed at his ears. With an otherworldly note halfway between music and a shout of triumph, the Imperator's voids sprang back into life. Most of his sons had landed, but not all. Three passed through the raised voids without harm. Two more were displaced by the warp-tech defences. One vanished in a clap of orange light. The other disintegrated, a severed golden arm crashing down in front of Sanguinius, Bolter emptying itself in the dead man's grip. He paused a moment. The arm reminded him of the wound inflicted upon Ascalon by Kurz. It reminded him of all the insults inflicted on his sons by the traitors. His anger grew, red, strong, atavistic.
"Into the Titan! Kill them all!"
he bellowed. His warriors were happy to obey, slaughtering the so-called new Mechanicum slaves like helpless livestock, and disappearing within the many portals that led inside the Acropolis. Sanguinius cast around for a swift solution to the problem of Axis Mundi. He glanced down, to his left, to where the mighty head swung across the field, seeking new victims between the sheets of fire and energy blazing off its void shields. Within his helm, Sanguinius's eyes narrowed and fixed upon his target. He turned, opened wide his wings, and leapt. Borrowed glimpses of the chaos inside the Imperator played over Sanguinius's helmplate. He could, if he wished, view the autosense's feed of 100 men at once, each vid-image smaller than a newborn's fingernail, though perfectly clear to his Emperor-made sight. 5 sanguinary guard followed him down to the command head. The rest fought their way into the engine. Working in 2s and 3s, they scoured the fortress of hostiles. Then began the long descent into the machine's interior, towards its down decks and the vulnerable mechanisms they housed. A laudable strategy, but Sanguinius was set on a literal decapitation strike, something that would be seen, something that would be noted. As he plummeted to the head, he couched the spear of Telesto under his left arm and let fly with its energy burst. How the weapon generated the pulses was unknown. It was a thing of high science, a relic of greater days, and little in the current diminished age could resist its power. Where energy blast met the head, it disintegrated a perfectly round hole, neat as trepanation. Ceramite plasteel alloy, honeycombed plascrete, and adamantium skullplate vanished together. The gap seemed too small for the Primarch's body, but he stretched his wings high over his head so that his primary feathers touched, while his feet threaded the needle's eye of the hole. From leap to blast to ingress to the command deck took 2 seconds, far too little time for the crew to react. Golden boots clanged hard on deck plating. Sanguinius was moving before the ringing impact died, allowing 5 of his sons to follow him. Moderati started in their command thrones. Lesser servants of the Neocora goggled at this avatar of vengeance come into their midst. Their princeps was the first to react, understandably so. He stood upon an elaborate dais, encased in a full haptic harness, and his blinded eye sockets plugged directly into the great machine's senses. But still he saw.
"Bring him down!" he roared,
the Titan's warhorn blare voicing his panic simultaneously. The command zealot of the Imperator was impressive, not like the cramped spaces that accommodated the crew of smaller Titans. It had many commonalities of a void ship command deck, though the architecture bore the signs of religious expression absent from those of the Emperor's forces. It was as much a temple to the living machine god as a control room, its systems adorned with multiple iterations of the glaring half-cybernetic skulls of the Opus Machina. These had been defiled, the foreheads branded with the Eye of Horus and the unclean octed symbol of chaos that, though executed with great art, seemed to have a crudeness that lessened the character of the entire deck. Myrmidons in the black of the Dark Mechanicum lurched into sudden life from sentry alcoves about the bridge's upper deck. They came for the Primarch with fearless purpose. All were armed with wicked close combat attachments, sheathed in disruption fields. The potency of the Mechanicum's ranged weapons rendered them unsuitable for use in so sacred a place. Mechanicum Myrmidons were warrior priests, dedicating their lives to the machine god through battle. They had 4 arms, or 6. Their brains and remaining organs were protected by centimeters of armor plating. Every one of them had a century of practice, backed up with terabytes of inloaded combat engrams. Those selected to guard the holiest of holies were the most elite, and were a match for the sanguinary guard. Furious combat erupted as the two forces met. Bolts scored the air and burst on armored walls. Disruptor fields roared as they clashed. Moderati attempted to pilot their giant charge while battle raged around them. The princeps howled imprecations. The armored gates to the Titan's anti opened, and the tech guard streamed within, raising uranium carbines and volkites against the Blood Angels. A sanguinary guard died, then a second. Four myrmidons fell in return. A Moderati steersman slumped over his deck, his back blown out by a stray bolt. Servitors jerked in their alcoves as they were hit. The movements of the god machine became erratic.
"The Primarch! Slay the Primarch!" shouted the priests.
Sanguinius rose up to his full height. He cast the veil of mortality aside, giving the false prophets of the machine god a clear view of his full and terrifying power.
"I do not die here today!" he roared.
With the blade in carmine, he cleaved a myrmidon in twain, spun around, knocked another back with a blow from his wings as he brought the spear of Telesto up, leveled it, and fired. The cone of energy burst over a sanguinary guard battling two myrmidons. He was preserved. The emissions of the spear would harm none of the blood, and the sanguinary guard was not even staggered, but the myrmidons were shattered into scrap. The blast slammed into the princeps and consumed him also. Having lost the linchpin of the god engine's neural architecture, the Moderati were subjected to the full force of the Imperator's mighty soul. They began to scream. Sanguinius was a living golden wind. His blades whirled and descended, leaving naught but ruin in their wake. The tech guard was slain, driven back and held in the door. The myrmidons died. The great Titan lumbered drunkenly, tipping sideways, setting the deck at an angle. Bodies and machine parts skidded over the ground.
"Finish it!"
ordered Sanguinius, as he stood alone in the gate and held back the engine's frantic garrison. Two of the five sanguinary guard that had come with him into the Zella remained. They put up their weapons and unclasped melter flasks from their thighs. They had only one apiece, but their keen minds identified the most vulnerable parts of the machine's command systems, and they clamped the fusion charges in place there. The Moderati were screaming without drawing breath. Bright fires shot from their eye sockets as they jerked like the victims of electrocution. Alarms blared from every quarter. Panicked shouts came from deep within the god machine.
"Evacuate!"
ordered Sanguinius. Still slaughtering the Skitarii coming to the door, he aimed his spear behind him and blew out one of the great cathedral windows that served the god engine for eyes. The sounds of metal giants at war roared in from outside. Dust, smoke, and the smell of burning filled up the Zella.
"Withdraw, my sons! Withdraw!"
The two guard ran for the broken eye, jump packs igniting. They spread their metal wings and soared away. Sanguinius backed away from the door, killing the men machines that spilled after him. Their fury was so great at his desecration of their temple that they threw their lives away thoughtlessly. Step by step, he moved across the heaving deck, sword and spear spinning about him, every move calculated to end a life. Anger that was equal to his brother Angron's, and as much a part of him as Angron's was, rose through his body, empowering his strikes, pushing his engineered reflexes to supernatural speeds. The Titan was staggering about, hardly under control at all. Its warhorns howled the Moderati's pain. The last of the tech guard fell. The melter bombs neared the end of their countdown. Sanguinius strode to the broken window. Before he leapt, he looked behind him to the broken bodies tumbling over the canting deck, and the Moderati thrashing in agony within their bonds.
"So shall perish all who defy the will of the Emperor, whether mortal man or mighty engine."
As he dropped from the window, the melter charges blew. A contained fusion reaction slagged the central MIU interface altar. The second burned through the power balancing relays, then sank through the molten hole it had made into the lower deck of the head. Sanguinius was soaring through the air, mighty wing beats carrying him upwards towards his circling stormbird, when a secondary explosion tore off the Imperator's face. Void shields blew out in a catastrophic chain reaction.
Fire pouring from its shattered neck, metal groaning, men screaming, the Titan toppled forward, its knees bent, and its guns gouged at the earth as it kneeled. It came to a rest in a half-bow, as if honouring its vanquisher. Imperial Titans greeted the sight of the fallen traitor with a mighty fanfare. The battle raged on.